Good afternoon. Welcome to the Eco News Report. I'm your host this week, Tom Wheeler, Executive Director of EPIC, the Environmental Protection Information Center. The Eco News Report is brought to you by the North Coast Environmental Center, publisher of our regional environmental newspaper, Eco News. Joining me in the studio are two people I'm glad to call friends, Ryan Campbell and Colin Fisk of the Coalition for Responsible Transportation Priorities. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks.
All right. Well, today's show is a little bit outside of what we talk about primarily when we talk about environmentalism. We're here to explore the intersection between planning, individual and community health, and a low carbon future for the North Coast. I think most people don't stop to think about the decisions that most shape their day-to-day life, the zoning codes, planning and land use decisions, and so forth, that ensure that their neighbor is not going to be a power plant, or that there are enough parks or enough parking, or that the sidewalks are at a width that are accessible and, you know, you can walk down hand in hand with a friend. So these are the little things that cumulatively add up and make a city, a place livable, and influence the way that we interact with our world. It influences the decisions that we make. And so we can make smarter decisions, and we can make decisions built for the 21st century. And that's what we're here to talk about. All right. So Colin and Ryan from the Coalition for Responsible Transportation Priorities, let's go with Ryan first. Tell me about Colin.
So Colin is very tall. And he's, I think, kind of one of the things I really like about Colin is that he's like dedicated his life to trying to make the world a better place, which I think we all subscribe to that notion. But Colin's been involved with a lot of advocacy projects in the past. He fought against Walmart in Florida. He was one of the principal architects of Measure P, or proponents of it. And lately, he's been kind of steering the wheel for the CRTP and doing good advocacy work with Richardson's Grove. He also is a great farmer and has lots of duck eggs that he can't seem to get rid of. And so I end up with a lot of those.
Oh, that's delightful.
Yeah.
And Measure P is the no on GMO from 2014?
Correct.
Yeah. So good work on shepherding that to success. All right. So that was very complimentary. Thanks, Ryan. Colin, now you can rag on Ryan.
Oh, excellent. So let's see. Ryan is, his day job is as a lecturer in physics and astronomy at HSU. And we met originally, I think, because my wife also teaches at HSU and we have multiple connections that way. But Ryan is really passionate about urban planning. And so we've done a lot of talking about that, about transportation options and zoning and land use planning generally. So we sort of got started on a lot of the work we're doing now when, after the last election, the last presidential election, Ryan told me he really wanted to do something positive in the community. And what he wanted to do was work in Arcata on progressive transportation policy. And I said, hey, come on into the Coalition for Responsible Transportation Priorities and we will work with you on that. And so that sort of led to where we are right now.
All right. And that's a perfect segue to what is the Coalition for Responsible Transportation Priorities, other than a very difficult organization to say its name?
We can call it CRTP from now on, hopefully. So it's, I'll give you the mission, is to promote transportation solutions which support and protect a healthy environment, healthy people, healthy communities, and a healthy economy on the North Coast. And so you can see it's a pretty broad mission for a small organization like ours. But we started out, we were founded a couple of years ago by veterans of the fights against a couple of Caltrans projects, one down at Richardson Grove and the other one up in the Smith River Canyon on 199 and 197, both of them designed to allow larger trucks through into our area. But we always looked at those as being part of a bigger picture. And if we don't think that those are the kinds of things that the government should be spending our transportation dollars on, then what should they be doing? And so we've talked a lot about sort of the crumbling state of our infrastructure, but also about what kind of infrastructure we need for the 21st century and for a low carbon transportation future, and also for healthier communities and a higher quality of life, because as you can tell from our mission statement, we view transportation as being really closely tied to social things and economic things, as well as environmental issues.
All right. And so as a small organization, your bite-sized chunk that you are starting off with is not so bite-sized. It's the plaza, the kind of main square in Arcata. Can someone just kind of describe the plaza? Like what emotions does perhaps it invoke? Other than, to me, I feel like it's kind of like a bland cereal where it, you know, it's there.
Like
it's
fine.
Good, but... Yeah, cereal's good. Like yeah. I generally like cereal, but... You know, it's lacking something that drives me to want to eat it every day. Mm-hmm. Or, for the case of the plaza, go visit it and hang out and enjoy it as a large public space. Ryan, what's your take on the plaza?
Well, so I moved to Arcata in 2010, I guess. And I think the first memory I have of Arcata is the plaza. Like, we went to the farmer's market and I was immediately struck that, like, this is a place that was built around people, right? And, you know, it was just like this really rich social environment. And I was like, yay, I've made it to Arcata. And then I had the kind of this like, I don't know, backlash, I guess, when, you know, I came back after agreeing to move here. So I was already kind of anchored here. And like then I drove there and like it was there was like a vacuum. And like when there's farmers market going on, it's a great place. If there's a festival going on, it's a great place. But at often other times, it's hard to find like social life on the plaza. You kind of show up and you can't really just come there and expect that there's going to be people that, you know, or, you know, things going on necessarily. And I think that dynamic makes it difficult for the plaza to be the kind of place that I think it could be.
Do you concur?
Yeah, I do. I think, and this sort of highlights that we're talking about really big issues here. We're talking about civic life in our society and how do we revitalize that? And there's a lot of components to it. But I think the area that we're focused on is something that people don't think about that much, which is transportation. It has a huge impact on our daily lives and our interactions with other people. And so one of the ways it impacts us is that, you know, the more time we spend in our cars and in traffic and so forth, there's a lot of negative social and civic impacts to that. The car is kind of a private space in a public space, and it cuts us off from other people. We go at speeds where we can't really interact, at least in a positive way, with other with other people. And I think, I don't know, Ryan, do you have any of those facts about, you know, how long, the longer you stay in a car or the longer your commute is, there's all sorts of negative ramifications of that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, I can't remember exactly offhand, Colin, but...
Yeah, but it impacts your happiness.
You live a longer life, definitely.
Divorce rates, I think.
Yeah, it's one of the greatest, like, you know, money fire pits that you can possibly do. Like, the average American family works about one day a week to pay for their car, which is a huge expense.
Yeah.
And like, for me, a lot of it is... Yeah, it's like this weird intersection between like the transportation side of things and what that's doing to our environment, and then like the state of our social connections in Arcata and in the country, like the fact that, you know, our social webs have dwindled to the point where we just have like one connection on average. I read something interesting last night that the health impacts of living alone are they're equal in magnitude to smoking 15 cigarettes a day. Like, that loneliness question is huge.
Wow.
In terms of like how healthy we are.
Well, so this kind of gets us to where I was hoping we would go, which is, so we have this thing, this public resource, which is not kind of that great, right? Great on weekends when there's a farmer's market or a festival, but if we were to go there right now, we probably wouldn't want to hang out for very long. All right, so what would make a great plaza? And then we can talk about how we get there, mm-hmm. Right?
Do you want to?
Sure. So we sort of subscribe generally to some of the principles of what are called placemaking, and other organizations and researchers have done a lot of work into that. But essentially, there are a few key components to what makes a great social space, and a couple of things that we're focused on are, one thing is making sure that there are enough activities available. And so there's an organization called the Project for Public Spaces, and the idea they promote, which we also believe, is that you need at least 10 good activities in a place to make it sort of a self-sustaining activity center. And right now on the plaza, you know, if you stop and think about what are the things to do on the plaza on an average weekday, not 10, unless you're really creative. And so we want to create sort of an infrastructure and a culture that supports a lot of different activities on the plaza to create that constant mm-hmm. activity. And then another thing is having it be accessible and built around a scale that's for people and not for vehicles. And that gets back to the transportation aspect, which is, you know, people should be able to walk there, bike there. They should be able to run into each other and stop and have a conversation, you know, sit down next to each other or whatever. That designing for people rather than for vehicles is a key thing.
Like, for example, right now the plaza is 64% asphalt. And if you actually look at the streets, they indent when you get to the plaza in order to carve out enough room for all of the parking that transportation engineers in the 70s probably decided were necessary. There's roughly 100 to 105 parking spaces on the plaza. And in downtown Arcata, there's like 2,200. That is a lot of parking. The town has, you know, 17,000 people. And so we, you know, at any moment we need, I don't know, 30% of everyone to come downtown and be parking in order to, like, fill up that resource.
Yeah, I think that point that Ryan was making about how the plaza indents is a really interesting one, that in the privately owned properties on all the other blocks, the property that's available, the buildings, go right up to the sidewalk and right up to the edge of the block, basically. And then you get to the plaza, and all of a sudden, a huge portion of that public space is set aside for private car parking. And that just says something about, well, yeah, the 20th century's transportation priorities, I guess, and things that I think we're learning now maybe weren't the best ideas. There's a lot of really interesting research about the effects of an abundance of free parking and what that has, what that does to our transportation choices, as well as the economic effects on local businesses. And they're kind of counterintuitive. It's an interesting topic.
Well, so one thing that you'll hear from a local business, if you ever talk about taking out parking, is, you know, I'm struggling, I'm up against it. I used to have all these customers, now they're all buying their soap, whatever, online. And if we get rid of parking here, everyone is just going to go online, or they're going to go to the mall, or they're going to find a more kind of efficient way for them to shop. So if we're talking in some measure of parking reform, what do you say to these folks?
Well, so I guess I'd say two things. The first is that there's been a considerable amount of research. One study I know about kind of compared the fortunes of Westwood in Los Angeles to Pasadena. And these are kind of comparable shopping centers. And what happened was Pasadena decided to start metering parking. So there was no more free parking in downtown Pasadena. And they also contracted some of the parking spaces that were available. And as soon as they decided to do that, there was like a reversal of fortunes of the two shopping centers, where all of a sudden Pasadena became this like hip spot, whereas before it had been kind of alienated and like no one was going there. And Westwood has been kind of declining ever since. The average parking meter in Pasadena brings in about $1,700 per space, I think, a year, which is this huge revenue source that the local business owners have used to kind of fix up the amenities nearby and made it even a more attractive place. So it's this kind of virtuous cycle.
And I think I want to jump in here too, because I want to emphasize we definitely, you know, part of our motivation in doing this actually is to support the local economy and support the small local businesses. And so we definitely have, you know, their best interests at heart and you know, empathize with the situation that a lot of them are in. You know, Ryan likes to say, what is it? Local business is social business. That's one of his mantras. And I think that's the point that you're making, that as everyone goes to shop online, that, you know, bites into the sales of local retailers, for example, that one of the ways, or maybe the only way, that local businesses can compete is to promote the social nature of it, that what people are missing is a social experience. And, you know, when you create a social space, I think in a lot of other cities and towns around the world have found that when there is a thriving social space, it'll draw people in regardless of how convenient, you know, the parking is. people will come there and hang out there and spend money there. So we definitely think it would be a positive thing in that regard.
All right. We're at the middle of our show. You're listening to the Eco News Report. I'm your host, Tom Wheeler. I'm speaking with Ryan and Colin about the Arcata Plaza parking, sustainable development, and so on and so on and so on. I want to do a quick plug for the Epic Fall Celebration, which will be Friday, November 3rd, coming right up in just over a week at the Mateel Community Center in Redway. You can get your tickets at wildcalifornia.org. It's going to be a great event. We are honoring Judy Berry, the late, great Judy Berry, with our Semper Virens Lifetime Achievement Award for all the work that she did around Redwood Summer, Headwaters, and so forth. And we are going to dance the night away with Alice DiMaselli, Joanne Rand, and Casey Neal and the Norway Rats. It should be a great time. This is Epic's major fundraiser of the year. So I would love to see your face. And yeah, if you're interested, go to wildcalifornia.org or you can give me a call at the office, 707-822-7711. All right, so back to the plaza. I think that we may have gotten a little bit distracted. What is it that CRTP is proposing? What are you asking or what are you putting forth right now?
So we've spent, well, mostly Ryan spent a lot of the summer talking to as many business owners as he could around the plaza about their concerns and doing some background research about parking and about urban planning and sort of trying to come up with a good proposal. And we did then come up with a proposal, which for the last couple of months we've been talking to business owners and other stakeholders about, the North Coast Growers Association that puts on the farmers markets and other nonprofits as well, property owners, business owners. And if you are a stakeholder and we haven't reached you yet, please check us out. We have a website, transportationpriorities.org, and you can contact us if you're interested in talking about it. But basically, the proposal in broad strokes would be to close off 8th and 9th streets on the plaza to vehicles, except for emergency vehicles and delivery vehicles, but close it off to through traffic, make those into pedestrian spaces, and encourage the development of new activities in those spaces, including more outdoor dining, maybe some little parklets like they've been doing in Eureka, that sort of thing. And then to transform G&H streets on the plaza, just for that block on the plaza, into a really slow-speed, pedestrian-priority type of environment that would make it easier for people to cross between the shops and the plaza on foot. Cars would still be able to drive there. There would still be parking and all of that, but it would be an area built more for people and a more friendly environment for being on foot. And then a few other proposals that are part of our general proposal involving, you know, working with the businesses to adopt some sort of a community-friendly plan to address some of the security concerns that folks have been putting forward. Working with the North Coast Growers Association to make it a car-free plaza on farmers markets just during the market time, which is something that they've been interested in for a while. And then further down the road, adding new infrastructure for more activities like we've been talking about. Do you have something to add?
Yeah, so I think a big part of our proposal is, like, in talking to all of the business owners this summer, one of the most frequently expressed concerns was just kind of the general antisocial atmosphere on the plaza, and also talking to citizens, like, people just didn't feel comfortable necessarily coming down to the plaza. And so our kind of thought is that we don't exclude anyone, but we bring everyone in. Like, we need to find reasons to anchor life on the plaza, and we also need to kind of stamp out the barriers between all of the different kinds of norms that are being expressed there, so that people that are shopping in the stores, if there isn't a street that people are kind of whizzing by all the time, you know, if people are going slower, then they maybe feel more comfortable crossing over and starting to participate in the civic life on the plaza, or vice versa. And so it becomes like a place where you don't have to go there just to go shopping, or you don't have to go there, you know, just to go to a farmer's market, but you're going there for the purpose of going there. And that becomes the reason that people end up on the plaza.
Right. Yeah. And I think, like Ryan said, there, as I'm sure everybody knows, the plaza has been a hot topic, especially the last couple of months, because of some of the, you know, crime and other incidents that have happened there recently, unfortunately. And we really think that something that promotes more people being there, more positive activities, more families is the way to go to address those problems. We don't think you can really enforce your way out of a situation, even if there are, you know, crimes being committed. It's not a situation that if you just increase enforcement, it'll resolve itself. You really need to just change the whole culture of the plaza by bringing in more folks doing other things and a diversity of individuals and activities.
So in the kind of environmental law or environmental world, there is something that is said, which I don't think is actually true. It's our old way of thinking about this, but it might be true here, which is dilution is a solution to pollution. Which is this idea that, you know, if you have polluted water, you just need to add more water and then the water becomes less polluted, you know, per parts per million or whatever. It's kind of true here, at least from my own personal experience, going to things like farmers markets or other events on the plaza, the kind of unsavory element or whatever that people always talk about, you know, they're still there. They're still around. But there are just so many other more people there, and there are kids running around, and there's music, and there's life, that instead of the plaza being dominated kind of by this one group of people, you now have all these groups of people.
I think that's partly true. I think dilution is part of the answer, but I also think it's not quite analogous to the, you know, the pollution issue, because, well, first of all, they're people,
and right? Of course,
we should you know keep that in mind, that they're people who, you know, have rights and have families and have their own stuff going on, but also because it's not a static thing. You know, when you bring in additional activities and you just get a different sort of energy about the place, folks who might have been doing what are perceived as antisocial activities before might change what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And we've talked to folks who have been, you know, trying to address issues on the plaza now for years, and they talk about how they'll go and engage with people, and maybe those people that before were, you know, smoking a cigarette or having a drink or something will join them in picking up trash on the plaza, for example. And so I think, you know, it's not just a static situation where there's good individuals and bad individuals.
Right.
It's about, you know, activities and civic life and how we can bring everybody into it.
And modeling like a pro-social way of being. Mm-hmm. And, you know, hopefully through modeling those kind of norms, everyone participates in them.
Mm-hmm.
And so you had a meeting the other day, and one of the points raised by somebody at the meeting was that cars can also act as a shield, that it kind of enables bad behavior because people can kind of hide behind this wall of cars. They're blocked off. And so these are also interrelated pieces. So by reducing parking, by getting more people on the plaza, we are perhaps diluting, but we're also changing behavior. We're encouraging good behavior, discouraging bad behavior. Gosh, this is like social manipulation, right? Oh, no. Like,
they just gave a Nobel Prize for that.
Is this like the UN Agenda 21? But these are all interrelated pieces. And I think that we have models as well that we can turn and we can look at for what the plaza could be like.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you've ever been to Europe and you've been in Denmark or any of these places, some of these principles are I don't know if they originated there, but they have certainly been popularized by city planners in Europe. And we also have it here in the United States. We have things like Church Street in Burlington, Vermont, where they took a street and they closed it to cars for most of the day and put down cobblestones and put in amenities to kind of get people there and keep them there. And it is now the heart and soul of the city. It's a fantastic pro-social place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great example too, because I think a lot of people think of this as being a European phenomenon, but there are plenty of good examples in the U.S. and in small towns too. It's not just a big city thing. It's not just, you know, pedestrianizing Times Square or something. It's also, you know, these squares and plazas and public spaces are found in tiny towns also, and can be very successful.
Let's talk about getting people walking more, because that's mm-hmm. another benefit of this, is that it could encourage healthier behavior. Does someone want to talk about that?
Like the health effects of walking more?
How can redesigning the plaza, for example, or how can mm-hmm. things like sidewalks?
So I think one of the principles that we subscribe to is called induced demand. And we kind of first heard about it, you know, maybe in the context of building freeways. And if you build these like enormous freeways, then like 2 years later, they're full again. And it's like, I don't know, they have some fancy names for that. But basically, the idea is that people will use whatever the transportation resource they have in order to facilitate their needs. And so you end up with more people driving if you build things for them to drive on. And we know that the same thing is true for walking. If you build nice sidewalks and you build kind of safe ways for people to walk around, then you're going to get more people doing walking trips. You know, something that strikes me is that, you know, when we're talking about the social side of things, we're kind of talking about like an induced demand of the soul, right? Like what we really want to do is bring people to the plaza and subscribe to these like greater ways of being together. And that kind of will create the types of norms that we want to see expressed on the plaza.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. And induced demand is a key concept, which is maybe a little bit counterintuitive at first. After all, we did spend, you know, the last century building huge freeways and then widening them more as they got more congested. But it's now, you know, pretty well established that when you create more capacity for cars, more people will drive. And not only that, but the reason for it is pretty well understood also, which is that when it becomes faster or more convenient, that causes people, more people to make that choice. And so that's why when you build more free parking, for example, that makes it faster and more convenient to drive also, and more people will drive. And if you widen your sidewalks or if you provide a separated bike lane, you know, that makes it faster and more convenient to do those forms of transportation, and people will likely switch to those to a certain degree. You know, we recognize, of course, that, you know, we live in an area that has a lot of rural residents, and some folks are too far away to walk or bike anywhere. But there is a big potential even here, given our population distribution, to transfer a lot of those trips to walking and biking, which we're going to need to do for climate reasons, if nothing else.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we got to wrap it up, but you are going to be pitching this to the Arcata City Council. Obviously, Coalition for Transportation Priorities can't do this on their own. And so we're trying to get this to be a public process. But if you want to find out more, what's the website called? Transportationpriorities.org?
That's correct.
All right. Check out transportationpriorities.org. And hey, on November 3rd, how about you come down to the Mateel for the epic fall celebration? It'll be a great time.
That sounds really fun.
Yeah, you better come.
I'll be there.
Yeah. All right. Well, I hope to see everyone, all of the listening audience there. Well, it's that time again. This has been the Eco News Report. My name is Tom Wheeler, and I've been your host for the past half hour. I was just speaking with Colin Fisk and Ryan Campbell for the Coalition for Responsible Transportation Priorities about redesigning the Arcata Plaza to be better for pedestrians. If you have any questions or comments about this program, please call our listener comment line at 826-6089. If you'd like to replay this interview or share it with others, you can go to the archive programs page at khsu.org. And this is pretty cool. The Eco News Report is now a podcast. So look for it on your favorite podcast application, Apple Podcast, for example, or I use Podcast Addict, and subscribe. The Eco News Report is produced at Humboldt State University in cooperation with the North Coast Environmental Center. Many thanks, as always, to Fred for engineering. Join us again next week right here for the Eco News Report.